This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
A good Monday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio. A lot to dissect as we get to the NFL and the games that happened on Sunday, and then plus the games that happened on Thursday, which of course leads us to the game that's going to happen on tonight, which is really no bearing on anything between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Indianapolis Colts. But there were games on Sunday that gave us a little bit more of a statement on who teams are. We play this game all the time with teams. We always wonder at what point can we make a definitive statement about how good a team is or how not well equipped the team may be towards a playoff run. Last night was a good example of that with the Philadelphia Eagles. They have been the best team in the NFL record-wise, but would you put them in the category of the best team in the NFL? I mean, if you look across the landscape of what Buffalo had done a couple of times this year, what Kansas City is continuing to do, or where Philadelphia would just keep winning games and winning games and winning games. And last night, Jalen Hurts once again added a piece to his great resume this season by running for more yards than any Eagles quarterback in the history of the franchise. As it's been pointed out, more than Donovan McNabb and Randall Cunningham and even Michael Vick, Jalen Hurts had 157 yards rushing yesterday in a 40-33 victory against the Green Bay Packers, which wasn't as close as the final score may have been indicating. Miles Sanders ran for 2 touchdowns. This team is now 10-1. And for the Packers, it's a lost season. And it was a lost season going into this game. This wasn't a team that was on the cusp of making a breakthrough or anything like that. We never really felt like that was occurring for the Green Bay Packers. It just was one of those games where they were beaten by a better football team. Aaron Rodgers had to leave the game with an injury. He's going to get that checked out. Jordan Love came in, had some nice plays, I mean, including a touchdown pass to Christian Watson in the fourth quarter. But even though it felt like the game at times was getting close, it never felt like it was a close football game. It was one of those. Now we're going to get to these games. We're going to get to the college football season that ended on Saturday, at least for the regular season, as now it is time for championship weekend and some of the ramifications that of what happened on Saturday that may go into the decision on Tuesday night for the college football playoff committee. Lots and lots of football, including the other football, as we go over England and the United States in that 0-0 nil-nil tie at the World Cup. So a lot to dissect this hour. Thanks for sticking with us. It's Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, I hope you all had a very good Thanksgiving weekend, a very long weekend, and hope you enjoyed it with all the festivities and the football, of course. Both sides of the football. World Cup, USA and England on Friday, and then the college games that were kind of throughout the weekend. Friday games, Saturday games, Thursday games, and then the Sunday NFL games. Well, it's so much that it's been really hard to like dissect what I would lead with, and I think I'm gonna stay with the NFL, but the college football I do have to get to because regular season is over, and there's one fan base that is still holding out hope that maybe that the committee will wake up and go, well, you know what, we don't really exactly not like them, and then there's opportunities this weekend to see if that could play out in their favor. We'll get to that coming up, but I've been saying for a long time that I think the one fallacy that a lot of people make in analyzing the NFL is sort of looking at when really good teams play really lousy teams. And I always remind people that the margin of error in NFL games is actually really slim. That you can be a lousy football team and you can still play to a level where you can beat one of the better teams in the league. We see it happen all the time that it's not like when a top college team plays, and pays money to play a Division II school. It's not that in the National Football League. Everybody on both sides of the football, professional football players, they're the best in the world. And sometimes it's just about matchups, but sometimes that actually does occur. And that happened yesterday in Miami where the Dolphins beat the Houston Houston Texans, and nobody thought the Houston Texans would be in a competitive game with the Miami Dolphins, who are one of the elite teams in the league. I was impressed with the Mike McDaniel for pulling starters with about 20 minutes to go in a game like that. Sometimes in games, you don't see this in the NFL a lot. You do not see almost a full pullback of starters in a game that early, because games can turn quickly. But when you're leading 30-0 at halftime, I think it's one of those moments where you go, yeah, I think everybody's done here. Let's wrap this up. We don't think our opponent, even though they again have professional football players on the other side, and you know what? Things can happen. You never know. And the turnovers can start occurring. Mike McDaniel had no fear that the Houston Texans would claw their way back. As the starters were pulled, the Dolphins didn't even score again in the second half, and they cruised to a 30-15 victory over the Houston Texans. So, just to be sure, while I will still hold on to the belief that, you know what, every single game, no matter what, in the NFL, you're never going to get a guaranteed result. Sometimes you do. And in the case with the Miami Dolphins, it was a pretty easy day. It did feel like a college game. It did feel like Alabama taking on, you know, Alabama State or something like that. It just felt like one of those games where, look, we're going to do our job. And when we get to a certain point, then other people get to play. Just dump out the starters and everybody else gets to play. That's what it felt like. That's how far the Houston Texans have fallen, to a point where that is now sort of the thing you do with them. 1-9-1. They're the only team in the NFL with one victory, and the Dolphins move to 8-3. I hope good things come for Houston. I really do. I hope they do. Because I remember when they were good, and I wanted to see if they would break through in that AFC. Back when they were, you know, had Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt. And all the, I really was hoping that they would break through into this sort of AFC Patriot-dominated conference with a few other teams peaking up a little bit. They never quite got there. They never quite got to that point where they were part of the, you know, Denver Broncos, New England Patriots, Pittsburgh Steelers sort of place in the AFC. I do hope they come back, but it was just sort of, I don't know, to me it reminded me of a college game, how that went down. But other games didn't go down that way. Other games went down to the wire, and a few went into overtime, and a few went right down to the end and almost did give us an excitement, you know, towards the end of the game. Jacksonville and Baltimore, another game that you might have said, well, the Jags are playing better teams now. They had really stunk for the most of the season, and now it looks like they're going to have another season with Doug Peterson at the helm that's no different than any other year that Jacksonville has had, where they win a handful of games but lose a whole bunch. But they go on to beat the Baltimore Ravens 28-27, where Trevor Lawrence threw for 321 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, was 29 of 37. And I think, what was it you said, Ron? The here's welcome to the NFL, finally, Trevor Lawrence? That was the kind of game that he was having?
I'll
give you
way.
Credit for the line. It did feel that way.
It felt
I'll give
that
you
way. It finally felt like he showed up to the NFL.
Yeah, and so they go down to the wire. They go for it on a 2-point conversion. They get the lead when they could have kicked the extra point, I should say, to tie the game. They went for two and they got it. And then the Ravens almost set a record for a field goal. I thought that was good by Justin Tucker. I swear, I thought the leg wasn't going to be the problem. It was going to be the accuracy from that far off outdoors.
Never underestimate the accuracy.
But he went right down the middle, right? And then I was like, that's good. That's good from 60. Oh, no, it isn't. It's just short.
Maybe 66, 65. Yeah.
I never got the angle as to how short it came.
Right.
So all I saw,
I know.
Same, it was just a head-on shot. So I don't know if he came up 5 yards short, or because the 66 one that he kicked was indoors. And so this is at, you know, down in Duval County. So I didn't know if he was going to actually pop it. But it was, I thought it was good the moment he kicked it. I went, oh my God, it's a 67-yard field goal. Oh, shoot, it wasn't. And then Jacksonville went on to win the game. And that brings the Ravens to a 7-4. And a game that both, there were two overtime games in the NFL. There was the Raiders go on to beat the Seattle Seahawks on a Josh Jacobs, what was it, 83-yard touchdown run? I mean, just to walk off with a run like that? The Raiders had also walked off a game against Denver where Devontae Adams caught a touchdown pass And then Josh Jacobs, 86 yards, bam, touchdown, and they go on to beat the Seahawks, who now have fallen to 6-5. And I really, really don't want the shine to be dulled on the Seattle Seahawks season, and I hope it isn't. But this is a couple of losses in a row now for the Seahawks, and the Raiders go to 4-7.
Are they becoming who they are, who we thought they were?
No, I mean, it was a 34-34 game.
True.
Right? So it wasn't like they stunk. It just they didn't play good enough defense, and they couldn't get the Raiders off the field.
But we have to say this, too. That was Heidi 2.0.
Yeah, because I was watching Red Zone, and that they stopped Red Zone. Because there was only one game left, and they're not allowed to give you that game. That's sort of the rule with Red Zone. Red Zone can be on when there's two games, but if there's only one game, the Red Zone has to go off the air because it's the only game they can show, and they can't upend the CBS broadcast. So you can't have a situation where people can watch the only game left on the air on either CBS or Red Zone. So that's the agreement that they've made, which is the right decision, because if you're CBS and you're paying a bunch of money, you want to be like, this is ours. Like if that's the only game in town. But what I didn't realize was I couldn't get it where I was living. So I didn't get the end of the game. So I didn't get it. So a lot of people across the country didn't get it. And the most people did not see the Raiders Seahawks game. Were you able to catch the end of it?
No.
I didn't either.
No, had to stay tuned for 60 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So it was only a local game. I was getting Niners. I was on Fox. I was getting Niners, but I wasn't getting anything else on CBS.
No, me neither.
So I didn't get a CBS game. The only game I got was the Niners game against the Saints.
Yeah.
And that was the only game I got.
Which wasn't a good game.
No, it wasn't a good game at all. And I didn't get a CBS game. So.
No late afternoon CBS game for us. We had we got to watch the Dolphins-Texans. And the only thing that led me to think about the Texans season, we used to kind of say like about Ohio State or Michigan when Michigan wasn't playing that well.
Right.
That if the Texans can beat the Browns this coming Sunday, then I think, for them, the season's a success.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's all they care about.
You had the the Cleveland game against Tampa Bay. Jacoby Brissett in his final start now, because next week it is Deshaun Watson's turn. He goes on to beat Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. Jacoby Brissett had a good year. The Browns didn't have a good year. He had a good year as a backup quarterback trying to play well enough to give your team a fighting chance. And then they're 4-7, so you can say, look, in the end, you're responsible for that. But Brissett had a pretty good year. For a backup guy, that's a pretty good season. We'll see what Deshaun Watson is not going to get this Browns team into the postseason. They're not going to rally at 4-7 to win it. If you were to tell me there's one team at 4-7 that is capable of making the playoffs, if you said to me, look, I guarantee you there's a 4-7 team that's going to shock you in the latter half of the season and go to the playoffs, I think that team is the Raiders. I think that team's the Raiders. I would take that team over any other 4-7 team, not the Packers or anybody else.
The Packers are terrible.
They're absolutely terrible. Most teams that are, obviously if you're 4-7, but the Raiders are an interesting team because they've been in one like close games all season long, and it's too bad that the coin hasn't really gone their way in a couple of games. Otherwise, if they had just turned a couple of games around, I would say that they are not out of it. Like if they had just turned one or two games this season and flipped it, then I would have said, oh yeah, you know what? I won't sleep on the Raiders. But Jacksonville is 4-7. No. A couple of others. I'm trying to look up Green Bay. No. Detroit. No. Carolina, the Saints both have 4 wins. No. Arizona. No. Rams. No. There would be only one team that I could say, yeah, maybe, but what are we asking teams to do at that level? Go 9-8. To make the playoffs, I don't know if 9-8 gets you in the AFC.
Yeah.
I just don't think it does. So a couple of more things we'll get to from the National Football League. We will get to the soccer match on Friday because I do want to dissect a 0-0 tie as best as you could dissect it from where the United States is. And we'll get into the college football game. Man, college football, doesn't college football do this to us all the time? We think there's going to be massive, massive amounts of teams. We always go, oh no, there's going to be 9 or 10 teams all vying. There isn't. There never is. There never is. There never is. When we expand this thing to the playoff, people say to me all the time, when we expand to the playoff, We're just going to argue about which 9 and 10 team should be getting the 8th slot. They go, yeah, we probably will, but we won't be enthusiastic about it. Right? Because I don't think you're going to have really super quality teams on that bottom level. It always seems to happen. We'll get to that coming up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Philip on Twitter. I lived in Houston during the Brian Cushing, Andre Johnson, Arian Foster era, and they were competing for the AFC South title every year. That city deserves much more than they're getting right now. I agree. I'm not going to lie. I wasn't a Houston Texans fan, but I liked them as sort of a fly in the ointment, if you will, during a period of time where it just felt like it was being dominated by Brady and Manning, right? I mean, it was like Brady, Manning. Manning was with the Broncos in 2012, 12, 13. I think it was 12 his first year. And the Patriots, of course, were just doing the Patriot things. And then there was these Texans teams that would be like 10-6, 12-4, 9-7, kind of dangerous teams, even before they got Deshaun Watson. And I always thought that there was one year it would pop for them just right, and it just never happened. It never happened for them. And now they got Deshaun Watson later on, and they were like 11-5 and 10-6, so they were back onto that level again. And it never came to fruition. And I always felt bad because I thought they had really put together great offensive teams, good defensive teams, obviously with JJ Watt and Brian Cushing, as you mentioned. And now they're 1-9-1, and it feels like a mess. It feels like they're just grabbing players to fill roster spots and just being like, well, hold on, everybody. But I love the way in the NFL you can change your fortunes, you get things right, you fix your salary cap issues, you get the right draft picks, you look around, you find the right pieces in place. Maybe you find the right head coach. Maybe Lovie Smith is that guy when they re-up the roster and make it better. Maybe he isn't. I don't know. But I don't know. I feel bad for this franchise and especially the city because I've worked for this network for 10 years. And even though I live in Nashville, I connect to so many people in Houston. They're just dying to see this team do something decent. But there was a period of time, man, when I thought that one year this Texans team is going to pop and break this Manning Brady stranglehold on the AFC.
And we're not that far removed from it. I mean,
really,
we're talking like
far.
3-4 years ago, and that's
well,
it.
Well, remember they went like 11-5 not that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, it was
the
playoff game against the Chiefs.
Remember, they had a huge lead against the
24-0.
Chiefs.
24-0.
That's right. They had a huge lead against the Chiefs, and that's when you felt like, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the year. And then ever since that second where they gave, like, they have been
when
a terrible
score
organization.
They didn't score a single point in that right. game afterwards.
After that, it was terrible.
Then everything broke off. I mean, you fired your coach. Your coach trades away your best franchise wide receiver. And then the Deshaun Watson drama.
Yeah.
Leading before the Deshaun Watson drama.
And the reason I was bringing it up at yes, I mean, why would I bring up a Miami Dolphins-Texans sort of route? Because you just don't see in the National Football League a team go, that's 30-0, we're cruising, we're good, and now everybody sits. Like you literally treated it like a college game, like a one-sided college game.
As if they got to rest their players for next week.
You don't see that in the – yeah, exactly. You just don't see that in the NFL. I mean, yeah, 30-0. I mean, if anybody's up 30-0, you probably do it. But you never know, like in a quick – couple of strikes, next thing you know, oh gosh, we're gonna get our starters back in this thing. But they didn't, they were fine. They let Skylar Thompson be quarterback the rest of the way for the Dolphins. They took two out and were like, that's good. He did have a little scare, so I mean that was probably one of the points that he was like, okay, maybe. But you just don't see that enough. But there were plenty of good games yesterday, plenty of good games that nullified sort of a walkthrough for the Miami Dolphins. And again, that Raiders game that nobody got to see was a really good back and forth battle. And the Seahawks again fall down a bit to 6-5. They were one of the top teams in the NFC. And now San Francisco, with their win yesterday, their shutout win against the Saints, are now cruising along at 7-4. And then last night, I didn't expect much last night. It's, you know what's sad? the fact that I get it, I get Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, and I don't buy them at all. Like, like we've reached that point now where even if I say, well, I think the Eagles will win, but I still want to see Aaron Rodgers. I didn't think there would be anything there. And even though the game appeared close on paper and it was a one-score game in the fourth quarter, it was like any other game you see in the NFL where it's close, but you never feel like it's close. You're not feeling
You feel like the Eagles could have sat everyone.
Yeah, they made it 37-30 with 9 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and I still didn't think that the Packers were going to rally behind Jordan Love and capture the game. I didn't think that at all.
Is it bad for me to think that was it possible that Aaron Rodgers was just like, I'm done? Not really having an injury?
He said last night, he was like, well, I feared a punctured lung. I'm like, and? Yeah. And the fact that you just hate playing on this team right now? Like, punctured lung and I'm getting kind of tired of this?
Yeah, I mean, they were pointing out, like, look, he's really struggling on the field. He's, like, you know, wincing here and there. And he's like, you could tell he's in pain. And I was like, yeah, but that seems like, you know, 2-3 years ago, Aaron Rodgers would have been like, you're not taking me off this field.
Yeah. It was just wasn't that long ago that he just admitted that he's been playing with a broken thumb.
Yeah.
Since the Giants game in London in week 5. I was like, oh, there you go. All right. Now we're popping these. Yeah. I like the quarterbacks do that a lot, though. I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers is telling the truth, but quarterbacks will not tell you. And then you're like, hey, why is like, would you be surprised if Russell Wilson was like, yeah, by the way, I've been playing with a broken leg this entire time, this entire season, and nobody knows about it. Like the Broncos again can't score. It doesn't matter who they play. God. They went to Carolina to play a team that is just trying to get to the end of the season. That is just like, get us out of here. They finally went with Sam Darnold.
Probably mad that they won.
Right? It's like, oh, God. They finally go with Sam Darnold. They've traded Christian McCaffrey. They're looking for another head coach this offseason. Steve Wilks is trying to keep everything together with a Band-Aid and tape. And the Broncos, who don't have to win games, like they're not going to the playoffs, but wouldn't you, if you're the Broncos, just be like, look, guys, we need to get like 40 points to just have everybody shut up with the fact that we can't score. And they still can't score. 23-10 to the hapless Carolina Panthers. 23-10. And you got defensive players yelling at Russell Wilson, even though afterwards they were like, no, it's all in love. No. That didn't look like love to me.
You know what? I'd much rather you just be honest at this point.
Right?
And like just tell us that, you know, no, you're sick of it.
You're sick of it. Exactly. Don't sugarcoat it afterwards.
You're telling me, you know, 23-10, and I'm looking at it going, yeah, but that's 7 felt like that extra 7 there in the fourth quarter felt like a consolation gift.
Right, exactly. Towards the end, right? Where Wilson just
and they struggled to get it in.
They struggled to score.
It was 4th and goal from the 18 because they had a delay of game. I mean, you look at it, it's like this they're just throwing up all over themselves.
They are terrible. Absolutely terrible. And you know what now? It's, to me, here's when you know things are going bad for an NFL player, right? When the narrative around that player, that star player is, well, he seems like a good guy. Once you start talking about a player's personality and whether he's a good dude or not, that's when you know because it's falling off a cliff. There's nothing else to talk about.
Is that the equivalent of, you know, your buddy setting you up with a girl?
Yeah, right? You know? Right.
Hey, how does she look? She has a great personality.
She has a great personality. If you're writing things like, it appears Russell Wilson is actually a good dude. Yeah, why are you saying that? Because he's a lousy football player right now. And I don't want to hear it. People are like, well, he's down his wide receiver and another player. He's supposed to be able to figure it out at his level. This isn't a backup that's trying to earn a spot in the NFL. This is a multiple Pro Bowler. This is a guy that went to a Super Bowl. Yes, he may have rode a defense. I get it. The Legion of Boom was one of the best defensive units that we've seen in the NFL for a while. But he's still a guy that has shown time and time again he has ability to play at a high level. And they certainly paid him enough money to think he still had that skill. Because they gave him a 5-year contract extension before he threw one pass in a Broncos uniform. And he came off a year last year. Let's not forget, we actually played pretty well. He played pretty well for a Seahawks team that wasn't particularly good with injuries and whatnot. So they got him. They went out and mortgaged all the picks, gave him a 5-year extension, and he cannot figure out a way to get that team into the end zone against no matter who they play. 23-10.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, welcome back to the NFL as we continue along this morning. But I got to get to the college football situation because we just finished the regular season. And now we are into the conference championship games, which are always fun. It's that one extra game some teams have to play. And sometimes they can be beneficial, but other times they can hurt you. For example, the USC Trojans are a perfect example of that. If the playoff committee said, you know what, Tuesday night's the Final Four. We don't care what happens. It's like the MVP vote, right? We just care about the regular season. We don't care about the playoffs. And we're going to determine later on and down the road for the national championship. USC would be in. They're currently ranked fourth in the AP poll. They're currently ranked fourth in the coaches poll. I don't think they would have put Ohio State ahead of the USC Trojans. I don't think the playoff committee on Tuesday night will do that. So I'm going to safely guess that they will put USC in the top four. But USC has a championship game to play in the Pac-12 title game coming up this weekend. And if they lose, that would be their second loss. And they're going to go up against a Utah team that is going to try to knock them off. And if they do knock them off, that'll be a second loss. And that may open the door for, yeah, you guessed it, Alabama. Alabama might be knocking on the door. Now, I have no idea, and we'll get a better sense of it on Tuesday night, because you can't use the AP and you can't use the coaches. But right now, Alabama, by both of those metrics, are ranked sixth. And they are the top two-loss team in the country right now. They are ahead of Tennessee, Penn State, and Washington, and Clemson. All of those teams with two losses. So the AP and the coaches have liked Alabama as the best two-loss team in the country. I don't know if the committee will, but they might. They might. Because Alabama's only two losses this year have come on the road against Tennessee, in which the Volunteers needed a kick at the end of the game to win it, and then an overtime game on the road at Baton Rouge. Other than that, Alabama has won every single game, even though they have not looked like Alabama. By the way, Auburn carved them up in terms of running the ball. Auburn didn't have the firepower of Bryce Young and couldn't keep up with Alabama in the Iron Bowl. But can I give my praise again to the South Carolina Gamecocks?
I was going to say congrats.
Once again,
I mean, are you feeling spoiled?
Listen, this has been one of the most amazing two weeks. I'm going to make this very, very clear. My school is not Georgia. They are not Alabama. They are not Florida. They are not Michigan. They do not compete for national championships. The closest in the 30-plus years that I've been associated with this school, the closest they ever got to any level of excellence was when they went to the SEC title game in 2010 and lost to Auburn. That's it. So this is a team where a Citrus Bowl is an amazing appearance, right? So you have to learn who you are first to sort of appreciate what you're doing. So yes, 8-4 is a remarkable season for this school. And they did it by 3 weeks ago, two weeks ago, they lost to Florida in Gainesville, in which they didn't show up at all. They were just blech, ugh. And it didn't make me think that with Tennessee and Clemson on the schedule that they were going to be closing out strong. But they've now beaten both Tennessee and Clemson. And more importantly, they knocked out the playoff hopes of both schools. Clemson had everything on the line in that game. Everything. 10-1, going to the ACC title game. Maybe you win that and you are part of the process of being considered to get back in sort of the fight. Your only losses to a Notre Dame team, right? All right, you might be able to maybe sway enough. Who knows? But they didn't. They didn't. Clemson couldn't overcome a South Carolina team that threw a pick six, threw an interception in the end zone from the 2-yard line, and I think there was a couple of other situations where I'm trying to think of another one that came in that game that Clemson just could not, and by Clemson being at home. Nevertheless, South Carolina goes on to win. It's one of the greatest 2-week stretches I've ever had rooting for this school. It's fantastic. It makes me know that Shane Beamer is the right guy. It was just fun to watch. It wasn't as fun as the throttling of Tennessee, because that was like touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. Had to sweat this one out a little bit, but it was phenomenal. And Spencer Rattler came through in the end of the final 2 weeks.
He's not coming back next year, right?
No.
He's done.
I think he's done.
Which kind of wish that he
kind of, because he's starting to show
had another season.
You never know who's in the cupboard, right? It could be another 6-6 season with whoever is coming through. But here's the thing. Here's why it's important. Just I know it's more about about me than anything else. South Carolina is in a really interesting part of the country because they are in the recruiting territory. Right, you have kids that are in the state. They may want to stay in the state, but they really have two options, not just one. They have two options to stay in the state of South Carolina. One, they could go to Clemson, obviously, and play for Dabo Swinney if they want. And two, Georgia is not that far away. Athens is not that far away from the state. So Kirby Smart can just dump himself into that state and pluck off recruits as well. So if you're South Carolina, you want to keep in-state kids in, you've got to show that the program is on the rise. Kids don't mind staying in-state. They are growing up in an environment where half the state roots for one school and half the state roots for the other school. And if they want to stay in that environment where they're playing for their uncle's favorite school or their neighbor's favorite school or their teacher's favorite school or whatever, they want to be part of that. But if South Carolina is not showing that they are capable of being a team that is going to be on the level that the kids want to play in, they go to Georgia, they go to Clemson, they go to North Carolina, for crying out loud. Tar Heels have been playing some good football over the last couple of years. They have other places that they can go. So I think that's why that win was really important. But did it shake up college football? Yeah, it certainly did. It put Clemson out of the picture. They already put Tennessee out of the picture. And like I said earlier, the Michigan and Alabama game, We said last week, if that game is an epic classic and it goes down to the wire and it's a close fought battle and whoever wins is going to get that two spot, then the loser might still be in the running. I don't think that's the case for Ohio State. I know right now at 11-1, they're 5 in the AP and 5 in the coaches, and they'll probably be 5th as the second one loss team in college football. I don't think that's the case. I think Ryan Day and the Buckeyes are out. No matter what shapes up, I think if TCU loses the Big 12 title game or USC loses the Pac-12 title game, if both of those occur, okay, now we're having another conversation. But I don't know. I don't know. Alabama's that feels like a pipe dream, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel like that's not going to happen?
No, Alabama.
But I'm not 100% sure. I can't lock it down because there is such a brand here that I think is going to permeate into this committee.
Well, I mean, definitely will too. If USC loses,
right?
USC. I mean, I can't imagine a world where we live in that USC loses and Alabama jumps up to that 4th spot ahead of Ohio State.
I'm telling you right now. Here's another scenario that I think people really have to figure out what they would feel about it. If TCU loses and can't stay in the playoff, that says a lot about how the committee feels about a team like them that kind of came out of nowhere, right? They weren't a traditional brand that had, you know, was around the top and stayed at the top. TCU rose up through the season. They did that typical route where you sort of go, well, we like you at the beginning, and then you start rising up. I would hate for the Horned Frogs to lose a game and be told they can't go to the playoff, because they're unbeaten right now. That would be a disaster. Because TCU's had that kind of year where they have beaten a lot of good teams this season in the Big 12. And if they get to lose, if they lose and you are throwing a two-loss Alabama team in there or an 11-1 Ohio State team that lost at home to Michigan, then I think the system needs to be burned to the ground. By the way, if I'm on the committee, Michigan's my number one team. I would put Michigan ahead of Georgia.
Yeah.
I know that the AP poll and the coaches poll overwhelmingly took Georgia, but I loved the way Michigan played on Saturday.
I mean, they
that was a great
that
win.
Was surprising.
That was
I didn't have a dog in the fight, but I didn't it wasn't beyond me to think Michigan could beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
I didn't think Michigan was going to blow out Ohio State.
Right, exactly. And I know, look, I know what you can point to Michigan's schedule this year and you can say, "Well, it was a close win against Maryland. It was a close game against Illinois." I get it. And Georgia hasn't really been in those kind of dogfights this season. And I completely understand. I mean, Georgia wiped Tennessee when Tennessee was riding really high. And I understand they have that kind of win. But they also took down Penn State in epic fashion. They beat Ohio State handedly in Columbus. And I like the way they're playing right now. I would put them number one. And I think a lot of it is the influence of that game. You know what it is? I'm telling you right now, it is the influence of the weekend. Because Georgia steamrolled Georgia Tech, which was what they should have done. But, hey, Georgia Tech put 14 points. That was 14 more points than I thought Georgia Tech would put on Georgia. But they took care of business. They just annihilated a team that was not very good, fired its coach in midseason. And Michigan blew me away with how good they played at Ohio State. Blew me away. That atmosphere, that environment, and they did that in the horseshoe. So maybe I'm not putting the entire context of the season together, and I'm sort of going by what I saw, but I loved what I saw. And by the way, if I'm on the committee, I'd vote Michigan number one because it's not my final thing. The final thing comes at the end of the championship game. But now, but the other game we haven't talked about is LSU losing to Texas A&M. What is that? LSU had the perfect opportunity to put themselves in this picture with a win against Georgia next weekend. Now it doesn't matter at all, except for pride and glory.
Do you think they got caught up looking at the results?
I think they absolutely did.
They had the late game, and they're looking at it like, oh, Texas A&M should be an easy beat. Oh, man, look, this team went down. Oh, my God, Michigan beat Ohio State. Look, we could jump up here. And I think they did.
I think there was a looking at a Texas A&M team that just was losing games in the SEC and then seeing, well, not necessarily taking them lightly, but also really not respecting the moment, because I think they were looking ahead to the idea of, hey, listen, we take care of business against Georgia next week. We're really in the picture now. Because we're an SEC champion with two losses, and I think they looked and said, well, that is going to be real currency. Even if we're two losses, even if we have two losses, look at who we lost to. The Tennessee team that was number one in the nation at one point, and a Florida State team that is rising through the ranks and, you know, just beat Florida to close out a very, very nice season for Mike Norvell. I think LSU was thinking, two losses and an SEC championship against the number one team in the country. There is no way they're keeping us out. And they now can't. They now can't because they couldn't get it done in College Station. And good for Texas A&M for spoiling that fun and spoiling that party in a lost season. Good for them. Because that season was a disaster. With all of the hype of them being a top 10 team at the beginning of the season, for them to go through a 6-game losing skid, and then they finally break it by beating UMass of all teams, and then take down the number 5 team in the country in LSU, good for them. Good for them to spoil it. So college football does this all the time. We think that there is going to be everything is going to play out the way we think it's going to play out, and there's going to be 7 or 8 teams all vying for 4 spots. And when it's all said and done, there really isn't. Now we've got a couple, but you have to make strong cases for these teams now. I mean, if Alabama is going to try to make a strong case for itself with 2 losses, then we don't have these 7-8 near perfect teams that we are sort of being led to believe. It doesn't mean we can't expand the playoff. That's not what I'm saying. I expand the playoff, but you are going to be getting down to the nitty gritty of, all right, 8, 9, 10. And you're going to be talking about some teams with some bad losses on that schedule, but does it matter? No, it doesn't seem to matter in other sports. All right. We'll continue. It is Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue on Wake Up Call. We'll get into this more coming up throughout the morning, but I did want to get your thoughts, Ron, real quick on 0-0 Friday against England. What is that? Is that a win?
That's a win.
It's a win, but it's not really a win because it's 1 point.
Yes,
it's emotionally a win.
It's emotionally a win.
But it doesn't mean we'll beat Iran.
No, it doesn't mean we'll beat Iran.
So what if the United States loses to Iran and that's it? Well, that's
We're
it.
Done.
So will we go back and go, well, we tied England? Or will we go? Will England go, yeah, whatever. So what? We're moving on. See ya. Bye.
If we lose to Iran, it'll be a disappointing World Cup.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, right?
If we tie Iran, I think it'll be a disappointing World Cup. I think at this point, since we hold the destiny in our hands, we should settle for nothing but a win.
If they tie Iran, do they go to the knockout round? So if they tie Iran,
it's win or go home.
Because Iran is a tie against Wales, or do they beat Wales?
They beat Wales.
They beat Wales. So they have a win, and the United States has no wins.
Right.
So a tie, United States is out.
If we tie, we're up to 3 points.
Is it concerning, though, that the United States has one goal in two games?
No.
In two matches?
No. I mean, yeah. Here's the thing. They should have scored more against Wales.
Right.
Nope. I mean, they played like, you know what, during that second half. First half, they played great. They were getting their opportunities. They got a goal in. That's how it was supposed to happen. They should have played like that in the second half. I don't know what happened, you know. Whatever. I think we already dissected that game, and it just wasn't pretty enough. Against England to get a 0-0 tie, because everyone assumed that we were going to lose. And in fact, because Iran had beat Wales earlier in the day, everyone was like, man, a 1-0 or 2-0 loss is not a terrible thing. You know, that was the idea going into it, because we just watched England, you know, destroy Iran. Now that we've tied, we went 0-0 with them, we got a point, a much-needed point out of England. We have to win. There's no substitute.
So, quick question. I really should look at the standings before I ask you this. If the United States had lost to England, does a win against Iran still get them in?
Yes.
So, in the end, it doesn't matter whether they got the point or not.
Well, we would need England to beat Wales at the same time.
Gotcha.
But this way, it doesn't matter. Our fate is in our hands no matter what.
So, they got to win. Tie or loss, they're out.
Tie, loss, we're
on
out.
Tuesday.
Yep.
Excellent. So, yeah, no, it was, for no scoring, it was impressive.